ओम शांति। Baba has been reminding us almost every morning about, according to time, the speed of our self-transformation has to become more intense. This morning, in a small panel with the center coordinators, somebody asked this question: what does it mean, intense effort? And of course, the answer was that it's really not intense work, but intense love. And that, after all, is our challenge, isn't it? Since you've been here in Madhavan, even before that, it's quite amazing to think that every single scene was perfect according to drama. Couldn't be any other way. Even the greatest maya that you may have had, or the greatest realization, was perfect according to drama. What, after all, does it mean, self-transformation? What are we transforming really? We know that sanskars, for example, are eternal. So self-transformation isn't actually transforming the sanskars, but transforming the way they work. In one of the small meetings recently, with the seniors, Dadi Guzar was present. And she was in a very simple and humble, and I would say even provocative mode. She wanted us to think and to go deeply into something. And her question was, okay, have you found a method by which we can do that sort of transformation of our sanskars? That the good and the pure ones are actually operational, and the not so good and the impure ones have been put out of action until next copper age. Yeah? And she asked each one who was in the meeting, was with the regional coordinators actually, and everyone gave some ideas, what was their method, and so on. And someone asked Daddy very sweetly, but Daddy, what's your method? And she said, well, I'm also looking for the method too. As if she didn't know, you know, just to show, I guess, the humility. And incredibly enough, a few days later, Baba came. It was on the 2nd of February. And I don't know if you remember, when the double foreigners were standing up, Baba was talking about exactly that. He was giving a method. Just before Daddy went to Baba, actually, someone reminded her of that little meeting and asked Daddy, can you ask Baba what he thinks about transforming sanskars? And therefore it did come in the Muli. So Baba came with an answer that we should isolate them and look at them and work on them, you know. Jenti Ben this morning was sharing that Daddy would once sat for 40 days trying to work on specific sanskars. And even Baba would be sending her off to go somewhere or the other on service. She would say, Baba, no, I want to work on these. I want to make these changes. And of course, we don't have 40 days these days to do that. So Daddy suggests that we have 40 minutes per day extra to work on specific sanskars that cause us and others sorrow, or maybe shame, or confusion. Now, one of the karmic relationships, which is not so good, is to take other people's time away from them because of our own problems. And so there, instead of trying to work things out ourselves, we try to get others involved in trying to understand ourselves. Never really happens. There's only one person that can understand me besides Baba. That's whom? Me. I'm the only one who can understand me and Baba. No one else. And everything that we do is like a search for understanding. Does anyone out there understand me? Please help me, you know. Is this one who's coming in the door now the one that will understand me? Because I don't understand myself. Please, someone, understand me. Because I'm having difficulty. You know, it's like we carry a sign on our backs. Please understand me. It's funny if you look at that in a centre where you've got all of these people moving around and everyone's got the sign on their back. Please someone understand me. Or even, please someone love me because I don't know how to do it exactly. Please love me, you know. I'm looking for ways to love myself. It's a paradox, isn't it? So everyone gave their answer in that meeting, and when it got to my turn, I shared an experience that I've been having, you know, for the last couple of months. And when I get into a silent mode, this is the sort of churning that I do in between one thing and the other. Try to hold on to an experience. I think it's wrong to look at least my experience tells me that it's not a good effort, it's not a positive effort to plan change in the future. You know, like a service program. We've got a big program coming up in June and these are the steps to get there. And these are the teams that are working on it and this one will do this, and like a project, you know. Step one, step two, step three, step four. I confess that reality is much more complex than a linear way of thinking can help us. And it seems from, this is what I shared in the meeting, and Baba and Daddy, of course, she was there, and she said, well, yes, but still you'll have to transform your sanskars as well. But the idea is that I can hold on to my perfect stage for a minute, for 2 minutes, for 5 minutes. Where is my perfect stage after all? It's not in the future, it's now. It's within me now. Everything that I can be and will be is in me now. And so, instead of just relaxing and waiting for the change to happen, which some people do, or breaking your head to make it happen, which other people do, it seems to me that it's probably much more profitable to invoke the experience now. And just for a few moments, you know, just stay. You know, our perfect state is there. You know, just there. Baba even invites us to invoke our future form and dance with it. And, of course, that does require a little bit of practice. Because instead of the future coming, you know, the future coming towards now, it's actually the past which is more present. So even the past of 5 seconds ago, if someone said this or someone did that or this, you know, we're constructing a reality based on our past perception rather than constructing it on the basis of what we can be. And it seems that it does create the loss of time, you know, the vicious cycles. Anyone ever made a loaf of bread that didn't rise? Yeah? Or a cake that became actually a pancake? A big piece of chocolate rubber. Yeah? Has that ever happened? So either the ingredients were wrong or the method was wrong. So if our stage doesn't sort of arise, it's some one thing or the other. I don't have the right ingredients and I don't have the right method. And if we look at sanskars especially and understand where I start and where I end, we tend to think that sanskars are something inside of us, and you know, we go into an introspective state and try to understand what it is there and so on. But in fact, if I really want to see my sanskars, I just have to look at the world that's forming around me. Not the people, not the things, but the relationships certainly. And probably where we lose most of our time is in dysfunctional connections with the world or with other people. Because I have this illusion of being separate from the world that forms around me. Nothing, you know, this problem that's happened, nothing to do with me. I need to understand my sanskara and work on it, if, you know. But actually it's one thing, you know. The sanskara's there, but it's what it's created, what the reality that's formed on the basis of it is right in front of my nose. So I have to look at the world that's around me and understand that this is exactly the replica of the way my sanskars are working now. And this includes health, this includes relationship, this includes abundance, this includes the connection that we have with nature and others, you know. And it becomes one thing, actually. It's not two separate things. And the refusal of, let's say, if we refuse to see that, we are fooling ourselves. And that's where we lose a lot of time, just fooling ourselves. Everything will be all right tomorrow. One day, sometime in the future. Somewhere a place for us, you know. Something in the future that's nice and cozy. You know, this, I think, you know, you've probably seen some people walking around dressed as deities, right? I think it's slightly ridiculous, sorry. But in the sense that, you know, I have to have that from the inside out and not from the outside in. And I mean, we need to have moments where we can wake up those divine sanskars. So hopefully that was the idea behind the program. You know, as we came in the back door, there was a couple of deities walking down the stairs. What? You know, there's a special Golden Age program organized for the Russians, for the center coordinators. Very beautiful, but you know, being a deity is not like going to your auntie's house. You know, it's not like just dressing up as one. Even being an angel is not a question of ordering a sequence of meditation commentary, and at the end of it you come and say, I am now an angel. Unless your practical life does not show that, then you're not. You know, you're fooling yourself. Yeah, you got a question? Yeah, hopefully. I'm not saying that it's not right to do. Of course not. It may invoke, but let's say, you know, I'm caught up with something that happened yesterday. There is then a battle between yesterday's scene and the future scene, and it depends which one has more weight, you know. In fact, it's good if you look at the photos of Brahmins when they're together enjoying themselves. They're lovely photos, and definitely there are the beautiful sanskars more present. But if you have you switch scenes and they're, the next day after the picnic, the class is sitting there and everyone sort of, the only connection they have is between their chin and their chest, right? Then it's unreal. It's schizophrenic, in a sense. It's schizophrenic. And that's why, first of all, I have to not just understand, but accept it. That the quality of my relationships and the quality of my life also now is due to the sanskars that are active and transforming sanskars, not exactly annulling them, making them disappear forever, but it's actually making them inactive, inoperable. They don't operate anymore, so they don't produce those scenes and situations anymore. I'll give you an example. Today we were talking about it also with the CCs, about forgiveness. Now, forgiveness, or lack of forgiveness, and Jenty was telling the story, and then I was also telling a story, but someone went to Daddy, apparently, and said, Daddy, there are three people that I've had problems with forgiving them. Two of them I can forgive, but this third one, very, very difficult. And Daddy said to the person, do you realize that you're carrying poison in yourself? It will poison you. One day or the other, it will poison you. And it's like you're trying to get this speed that Baba wants according to time, intense efforts on self-transformation. The time is now for that sort of velocity, but it's like you're driving along with your handbrake on. You can't go to the full velocity that's there because of this. So, and one of the analogies that I was sharing was the fish hook. It was easier for the fish to get on the hook, but because of the barb, it's very difficult for it to come off again. Like an arrow too, the arrow can go in, but it's very difficult to pull it out because of the barb, what's called. So when there's someone or something you're not able to forgive, you go on the hook. The person or the thing that you can't forgive goes on the hook after you. And so you're both hanging on the hook wherever you go. And you can pass years hanging on a hook. And it's painful. Every time you move, if you're hanging on a hook, every time you move, you'll feel it. It's at the, it's in the background all the time. And what we have to do is to remove that person. And how do we do it? It says, if many languages, in fact, the word forgive actually is forgive. In Spanish, perdonar. It means forgiving, right? Perdonar. Perdonare in Italian. Perdonner in French. So, it's to give. So obviously, if we want to bring up our best sanskars, we have to be in a giving mode and not a taking one. Because if I'm not forgiving, I'm for taking, right? I'm using this situation as an excuse, even, not to make the right effort. So, I'm not meditating, I've got this real big difficulty with so-and-so, so that's why my meditation's not so good. And so I accept that. So, I make mediocre efforts because of the excuse of this thing that I can't forgive. And then, you get the other person or the situation off the hook, but then you have to remove yourself, and that's the forgetting part, Some people say, I can forgive, but I can't forget. No way. Not possible. How do you forget? Forgetting is looking backwards, right? It's like, well, actually not looking backwards. It's looking forward. Because whatever you have to forget was behind you. So if you're driving along looking in the rearview mirror, you're going to have a crash, you know. And then there'll be another accident and another time wasted, you know. And all of these things accumulate in the account of debit. So, you know, I think sometimes, well, I have to say to myself many times, get real, you know. What led you to think like that? Why are you thinking such a way, you know? And, you know that that particular method is not going to work because you don't have the right ingredients. You can have the right good oven, you can have the right temperature, you can have the great bed, how do you call them, the bread pans, right? First class everything, but if you forget to put the yeast in, you're going to have pretty tough bread, you know? So this is, for me, if we look at the, you know, our challenge in this light, I have to ask myself, are the ingredients that I have inside of me sufficient to keep a good stage? Or do I have ingredients that will actually rob me of the possibility of having a good stage over a long period of time? Baba talks about the long period of time, no? To have a good stage, but some of us have a bad stage over a long period of time, right? Have anyone been through a phase like that? When things were not working much, right? And you're trying to find people to blame, situations to blame, and of course it all comes back to you anyway. Now, the ingredients are very important because, and I was just thinking before coming here that we would like to be constant, right, in our efforts. And that's the proof of the best use of time, this constancy. But constancy is impossible without the consistency, you know. Consistent means that it's mixed together in the best possible way. You know, even if you have the right ingredients, if you don't mix it properly, it also won't turn out, right? The bread. You know, if you just sort of get all the ingredients, you just sort of do a sort of a, you know, a 1 minute mix around with your hands, you're not going to get bread out of it, even if the ingredients are the best ones. So it's like the consistency is the work that we do to make the ingredients come together. And of course the third thing in this is the ingredients themselves, the content. You know, what do I contain internally? This is probably a mixture, if everyone's like me, of vices and virtues still. Right? Do you agree? Anyone think that they are just have a mixture of virtues at the moment? Not any vice at all? Hand up and you get a prize. Okay, no one would put their hand up actually. Because we know that there are the ingredients fighting it out still. I remember something that really was an eye-opener for me last year. I was in Germany. And Sister Sudesh, in a retreat with the German family, she mentioned that the word vikarm, which means sin, actually, if we break down the word, it means the action which separates. Vikarma, the action which separates. So the action which separates me from reality, or separates me from the truth, or separates someone else from the truth or the reality, is a sin. You know, even you can sin 10 times in this sense, in about 3 minutes when you're talking to somebody, by calling attention to something which is not real and not true. It's just an opinion or a perception or an interpretation. that if you took that situation to Baba and asked him, Baba, how would you think about it? He would say, what's the problem? You know, there's nothing here except the eternal roles of souls doing whatever they have to do, you know. There's nothing. That's why Baba says, Bap and Bat. Bat is the situation, Bap is Baba. So if you have the situation in your mind, you can't have Baba in your mind at the same time. And it does actually end up robbing us of time. And time, of course, in the confluent age is so precious. So the number one commodity that we have, we only have the present to do whatever we have to do. We cannot change the past and we can't change the future before it's happened. We can change the way we experience the present and that will change the future. But if I'm not able to, you know, make the most of the things that I have, then I probably won't be able to change the reality that continues to knock on my door and say, hey, you know, look at me. When are you gonna change the sanskars that are making this situation active? When are you gonna make operational the divine sanskars that create a different reality, you know? And this, the only thing that's different between now and the golden age are the difference between which sanskars are operating here. Right? And so the divine pure world has just as much right to exist as the impure and dark world. But they're both sides of the same coin of sanskars, you know? We started out, even till today, our greatest motivating forces are our original sanskars. But because there's weakness and because there's, let's say, a wrong understanding of the things around us, those divine sanskars end up working in a crooked way. So the what would be pure and elevated love becomes, you know, selective and prescriptive. You know, you should do this and you should do that, and you know, it's all for our own good, but really you have to change, you know. And Baba says, what? Who has to change? What does Baba say? Me first, right? Me first. Others first and everything else, but not the change, you know. And so while there are two parties or three parties who are sort of waiting for the other side to change, time goes. Time is wasted, and therefore, instead of, you know, making the most of things, it becomes a sometimes experience rather than a constant one. I always think that if you look at results, it was very interesting that Baba was meeting the RC group on the 2nd. And he said, he was talking about results, you know. What are the results of you people sitting around for hours and talking, you know? You have to show results rather than just think about results. And then the same thing, yeah, I think, applies individually. We're great at giving talks about what the nice results look like, yeah. But again, reality comes up and say, hey, hey you, look at me. Don't you think you have to change something in the way you see me? And the way you interact with me? Yeah? The effort, actually result is the effort divided by the waste. So we can do X amount of effort, but there's Y amount of waste. So if you remember your algebra, the result is divided by the waist. And of course, it's not what we would like. If we look at the greatest gift of the Confluence Age, what is it? What do you think? What is the greatest gift that we've received? The greatest ingredient, let's say. Understanding. What else? The understanding of knowledge. What else? Huh? Divine intellect, that's right. Huh? God. Yeah. Knowing who we are. Well, actually knowing God and knowing who we are. And there is a connection between these words that start with tri, you know, trinetri means having the third eye open. So the first question for ourselves in our own private time is, how open is my third eye when I look at others, when I look at Baba, and when I look at the situation that's formed around me? Is my interpretation based on emotion or based on the vices or based on, you know, manmat or paramat means someone else said something somewhere and you know, we make lists of things and we think, oh, that's fantastic. You know, the idea that we've really understood something can be, let's say, fooled because I can intelligently relate it to others. It means that I've understood it. Is that right? Is that right? It's not right. I need to, you know, how open is my third eye, really? When something comes up, am I seeing it with the eyes of Gyan, you know? And what is Gyan, basically? Every soul has their role to play. Every soul is an eternal drama. Every single scene is perfectly accurate. People are actually just being what they can be in that particular moment. They can't be anything else, because of the influence of their own mixtures, internal mixtures, you know, mixture of vices and virtues. So the person can only be like that because, you know, that's how, at that particular moment in the drama, that soul had to act like that. So if I really apply the third eye, I can become detached, right? And I can see more. I can see more, and there's a connection between Trinetri and Trilokinath and Trikaudashi. But Trilokinath is the master of the three worlds, so that gives some depth of experience. You know, if I can at the same time see a role in the corporeal world that's acting out, and at the same time be aware of the incorporeal soul as a point of light, you know, and the subtlety of this connection in between, it gives a dimension to things that brings me away from being flat, right? So Trikaldashi is the flat thing, the broad thing, because every single soul is acting out a role and they have a past, a present and a future, right? And I'm gracious enough to allow someone to have a past, right? Somebody is doing something or saying something in some way, and well, naturally, how else would they act in that particular moment if I could see where they've been and what they've been through? There's no other way that they would be acting except in that way. You know, lying or, you know, simulating or pretending or faking or, you know, making games or being aggressive or being arrogant or whatever. So give people a past and it's easy to accept their present. Yeah? And Baba always fixes his vision on our future, you know. When we actually are perfect, he doesn't see anything else. His vision penetrates all of the stuff that's around us all. I had the fortune to meet Baba many times personally. Many times. We lost count. In fact, it was in the days when no one had tape recorders. So, and actually, we didn't even bother to write down what Baba was saying because we thought it would never end, you know. Then we started to realize this is going to end, so let's start writing it down so someone would sit there and write down what Baba was saying. Because tape recorders in those days were those big things, you know. But when Baba gives drishti to us personally here in this world, it actually, what it does, it just lifts away all of the veils. You know, I'm often on the outside looking inside to myself. I don't know how that is with you. We get caught up in a situation and a scene and a relationship and a conversation or some other activity, and we lose sight of our real selves by doing that. And so we become outside of ourselves, and when we try to look back, we can't see us because there's a lot of veils in between. And Baba comes and he looks at us, gives drishti, and it penetrates all of the veils. And you feel completely naked in front of Baba's drishti. That this soul knows me completely. And it's an incredible experience. Baba knows me completely. I don't know myself completely, but Baba knows me completely. And he thinks it's okay. He gives me his blessings. He has all of the information if he wanted. And even then he will give blessings. So, I mean, that's how gracious we have to be with other people. Give them a future stage. Give them a perfect stage. Give them a past. And you'll understand the present. Where they're at and where they have to get to. And as it's, you know, as everyone is number-wise, that's another aspect of the third eye, isn't it? It's not just that everyone has a role and the drama's perfect, but everyone is number wise. People have different levels of understanding. People have different levels of assimilation too. And they may have understood more than someone else, but then it's a question of assimilation. And we can't assimilate if there's something already there. You know? If there's some other perception that we're cherishing inside of us, and I'm trying to learn something new, it won't displace that thing that we're holding on to from the past, for our past perception, our past way of doing things. I'll give you an example. You know, I've tried so many times, I can't change. No way. I've done it. I've done everything. I've tried everything. Nothing works. So we've got a great library, actually, of excuses to not have a good meditation. And so instead of being able to absorb, it's like there's something already there that nothing else can go in. So, you know, this Trikal Dashi is putting things in a very broad perspective. It's the basis of having a broad intellect. Now, if you have a broad perspective, the tendency is to become more stable, right? If you look at a building that has a broad foundation, it'll be more stable than one that has a narrow foundation. So if my look at reality is just a sort of a, you know, a gap in the window, and I'm actually looking at it through one eye, you know, trying to understand what's this world around me, you know? Why are people like that? Why, you know, in my center, people are like they are. And one person said to me, you know, how come our center attracts people who are slightly mad? Is it something to do with me, you know? I'm a mad people attractor. No. It's drama, right? But I have to throw away the narrow perspective and look at the big picture. And at the same time, the Trilokinath experience, being aware of the different dimensions of reality, So at the same time, I'm a soul in Paramnama, and at the same time, there's me at the actual end of my projection, caught up in some situation. It's a for me anyway, it's a very deep experience to think that at the same time, Baba did say once, when I come to give the moli, is Paramdham empty? Do you remember? You remember? And Baba said no. So I started to think, and of course all of us have a right to turn, yeah, in a creative way, that maybe we are actually projecting ourselves here. So at the same time, there's a part of me in Paramnama, and at the same time I'm caught up in this moment of time now, interacting with a reality which is actually a result of my own projection. And I've confused reality. Instead of seeing back, I'm looking out. And I get caught up in the world that I'm looking out at. And I forget where I've come from and who I am. So Trilokinath is that experience of keeping the dimension. And that gives depth to soul. So again, if you have a broad foundation, the tendency is to have stability. But if you have a broad and a deep foundation, the stability is unshakable. So I need to bring more depth into my experience by, you know, working out this incorporeal, subtle, angelic, corporeal experience and how they work together and how the incorporeal and the subtle experience can actually change the world that forms around us. And at the same time, giving space, you know, in our perception of others and things. Everything has a history, everyone's a history, everyone is just a history book walking on some legs, you know. Every single aspect of our personality has a history, you know. And actually it's anything that's an aberration, like something that's wrong or a defect, is actually a result of the fight between the ingredients within that soul, you know. So it's easy therefore to forgive. It's impossible to forgive with a narrow perspective. But if I look at anyone in a Trikaldashi way, I understand. And if there's no understanding, there's no forgiveness, because real understanding will make me merciful. And therefore, giving for giving. Yeah. And of course, the third one, actually the last one of the three, is Trimurti, right? And it's a very great title that Baba gives us, Master Trimurti. But then if I want to be that title, let's say, I have to see, first of all, what I'm creating, what I have to create, you know. This requires the inspiration, because actually we are, with Baba, co-creators of the new world. So the question of a Master Trimurti would be, is what I'm doing actually adding benefit or creating benefit? Am I contributing to the formation of the new world by what I'm doing and thinking and saying? And that's playing out the role, you know, following Baba's footsteps, Brahma Baba's footsteps. Because certainly, from what we've heard, yeah, very rarely he would be in a state where he wouldn't be contributing to the creation of the new world. It's a mode of being, isn't it? And of course, it's easy to create, but it's more difficult to sustain what we create. You see, in service meetings, so many ideas, but very few think about how to actually make it practical. and how to sustain it over a long period of time. And what it is that sustains, what is the great sustainer? In the world they talk about sustainability, but it's ridiculous to think about sustainability if you don't think about care and love. What sustains people, what sustains nature is care and love. So while I'm going busy about being creating, if I'm doing it with love and care, then what's coming into place, in fact, will be more sustainable over a long period of time. If that's not there, it won't. Well, it may stay. You may have one or two successes, but it won't stay standing. And sometimes we do get fooled by the, you know, the one or the two successes at the expense of something more long term. And the third aspect is obvious also. If I'm not destroying the things that are holding me back, I probably won't be able to create anything new anyway. These things work together, you know, the third eye and these other three trees, right? And they work together to make the most of the moment, make the most of the now. I remember I saw a survey once, and I think maybe I've mentioned it here or not, I can't remember. But they did a study in the UK about presence. And the only human beings that are 100% present are little babies, you know. They just see forms and colours and they pick up vibrations. They can't distinguish where they end and where that thing that they're seeing starts. There's no separation. And there's no thinking about this and that, no separating, this is good, this is not good. And when we're 4 years old, we've already got a bit of a past. Probably they say until we're 7 years old we hear the word no 100,000 times, especially from our mum. No, 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 no. You can't do that, you can't do that. No, no, no. So after 100,000 no's, we've got a bit of a past, and so at 4 years old we are 80% present and 20% not present. When we're eight, we're 60% present and 40% not there. When we're 14, 40% present, 60% not there. When we're 18, still a bit of fun and games, you know, enjoyment. This is serious because enjoyment is something in the present moment. Love is something we experience in the present moment. We can't experience yesterday's love or yesterday's happiness. It has to be now. So when we're 18, 80% not there, only 20% present. And when we're big adults, 3%. 97% of the time we're not in the moment. We're rushing from one scene to the next. We're anticipating what's going to happen. And we're also putting off what should happen. Right? That's part of it. Procrastination. And we're also trying to analyze the past and, you know, it's not relevant anymore. Especially if it robs me of present experience. There's an expression in English, analysis paralysis. So if we analyze things too much, we paralyze ourselves. Who knows? Who knows me, again, more than anyone else except Baba? It has to be me. So I can talk to people, get some hints. I can read books and get a few other hints. I can listen to talks and get the 10 steps to becoming happy, which I also find slightly ridiculous. But, you know, it's not real. The world is extremely complex, and there's no way that we can just set up a, you know, I do this and then this and then this and then this and I'll be there. If the ingredients are not right, the cake won't turn out. Yeah. So you have great steps, but you need some other things as well. And that's why we have this mantra of sometimes, for all of the reasons that I was thinking of sharing now. The mantra is sometimes. Sometimes I feel okay, but that's okay too. If I at least I feel that sometimes better than nothing, right? But then I have to, okay, if I can, grab onto my perfect stage for a minute, and then, after an hour, grab onto it for another minute or for 5 minutes, and then I can start stitching up these experiences and making it a little bit more consistent. That seems to be a better aim of our efforts than rather than trying to break our heads by confronting our vices. Baba always says that it's not the way, you know. It's better to turn the light on than to fight against the darkness, right? And the lack of self-respect plays a big role in this, because the lack of self-respect is the awareness of the vices that are still around in the soul, and the awareness of the handbrake that's still on, right? And the awareness of the things that haven't been sorted out in the past. And all of that together makes a cake called lack of self-respect. And we force ourselves to eat it. There's nothing else to eat. Right? So I need to check these things. And, bring the now here, basically. Bring the future here now. Not plan it. When I become karmateet, I will be, Tomorrow will be tomorrow. Right? So when I get there, it's still... It's like the horizon. That you go towards the horizon is still there, 50 kilometers away. So I need to bring it into the experience now. And that's why we need to create more dimensions to the experience rather than just, analyzing who said what and who did what and what happened, and we get caught up in all of that, and that affects the way we meditate. Instead of having yoga with Baba, we have yoga with the person involved. It's incredible, isn't it? I really would like someone else to change, because they're very inconvenient. Their lack of change is very inconvenient for me. So the very vision of seeing what's wrong with others makes it more difficult for them to change what they need to change. I think also there's in all traditions there is the phrase, treat others as you'd like to be treated yourself. But in fact, Baba, if you're a masochist and you're treating others as you treat yourself, right? If you don't have self-respect and you treat others in the way you treat yourself, what's going to happen? So it's not the right phrase. Baba would say, treat others as they could be. And they probably will become that. So these are some reflections about now and sometimes. Any comments or anything to say? Okay, what's the experience of claiming the inheritance now? I think, it's experience is similar to the experience of the relationships with Baba, in a way. Because we do have everything already. Baba's there as well. He is our lover, he is our father, he is our mother. He is everything that we had ever wanted, right? It's not that he will become that, he is now, yeah? And again, the inheritance is here now, right? It's here. Because I do have the love, I do have the peace, I do have the happiness, I do have everything. The only thing that I don't have, in fact, is spiritual power. I've got everything else except the main one. Of course, spiritual power ends up becoming like purity in a sense. So it's no use having everything and not having the power. So I guess the most important thing in the inheritance, Baba comes to empower us, and he's the only one that can do it. I can't do that myself, with myself, talking to others, reading books, listening to talks, breaking my head on my chest in Amrit Vela, you know. Trying to, you know, I can only do it understanding that Baba is the only one that can give me the power that I need to make my inheritance that I already have operational. So I need power. Anything else is an excuse, I think. And these are, you know, sooner or later, we have to come to the conclusion that Baba is the purifier and I'm not the purifier. It's an ego thing, isn't it? I can't, through my own thinking and my own reflections, purify myself. I need Baba's help for that. So I'm getting to the stage where I say, Baba, I really need you. And then that starts to activate the inheritance that's already there. At least that's my experience. Okay, so let's have a bit of good time. Yeah. Inoperable. Okay, he's saying, I was talking about making the, you know, in the not so good sanskaras inoperable, right? What's the method to do that? Well, put ourselves in situations where we have to give, and where Baba can use us as an instrument. And that's a real experience, and it's a real sensation that Baba's working through the souls. You know, we say things that, oh, that came out of my mouth. You know, what a great idea. Huh? So put ourselves in situations where we are actually getting our good sanskars operable. And not just sit on the sidelines trying to work this out in our own head. It won't work. Yeah, Baba does say that, you know, the opposite of lust, for example, is service. Interesting. Most people in the world live with their attention on the chakras below the belt, right? To say it in a more polite way. Their attention is on you know, the body, especially the area below the belt, right? Now, to conquer lust, I have to, you know, that's wanting to be served through the senses. The maximum wanting to be served through the senses is lust. And it can be, you know, you can be lustful towards a lasagna. There's a big connection between greed and lust, you know. You know, that thing's going to fulfill me. Well, you probably get a stomach ache. But the opposite, the complete opposite, is making, you know, practicing drishti and serving others from here. You know, and sending out rays and service through the mind. And so it's the opposite. If you want to conquer lust and you're not activating drishti, you'll never do it. Never. So everything has an opposite, yes. Okay, let's have some meditation. 7:05 past 7.